Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to episode podcast number 2 with Mark Pearson. Today we're going to talk about why invest with clarity and what that really truly means to all of our listeners out there. So Mark, let's just dive right in. What in God's name does invest with clarity mean?
Great question, Matt. Great to be with you again. Excited to be here. First, let me begin with what does Nepsis even mean? Because one of the greatest compliments we get is, what the heck is Nepsis?
Sure.
I've never even heard that word before. And Nepsis is a Greek word which means to be watchful, alert, and vigilant with a clear and sober mind against illusions and fear, thus allowing one to obtain ultimate clarity. And our passion here at Nepsis is to help investors gain greater clarity in their investments. It is the idea of knowing what you own and why you own it. And why is that so important? It is important because right now investors are focused on cost versus value. They are focused on fees and buying indexes as opposed to being focused on what businesses do I own and why do I own those businesses in the first place. So that's the baseline of Invest with Clarity. And of course, then it goes through many different paths, if you will.
Let's unpack why you feel it is so important for your clients to understand what they're investing in, because that's rare. I mean, I know you know that, but most advisors will just, you know, randomly say, well, hey, you know, we're in Netflix, whatever.
Yes.
I have no idea. But the why isn't there, Mark. So how do you flesh that out? How do you communicate that? And why do you think that's so important?
Well, great questions. And it's complicated, of course. It really is. And so I'm going to try to make it as simple as possible for people to understand. In the financial advisory world, there's really two types of financial advisors. There are the ones who think they are money managers, and then the ones who don't think they're money managers. And the ones who don't think they're money managers will readily say to you, I'm not a money manager. I need a money manager, a money management firm that can talk the blocking and tackling the investment philosophy and strategy, and I'll handle the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The advisor that thinks they're a money manager, I can appreciate that, and many of them probably are. But one of the questions I always tell people to ask a financial advisor who says they're a money manager is to ask them a very simple question, which is, can you tell me what my largest holding is?
Mm-hmm.
Most financial advisors cannot answer that question.
Interesting.
If you can't answer that question, you're not a money manager.
Good call.
It's about owning great businesses over time, the Warren Buffett school of thought, right?
Yeah.
And so financial advisors in by nature don't really have a great understanding of the true investment process of a fund or an ETF. They don't know the buy discipline. They don't know the sell discipline. And the industry over time has broken us down to this level of reducing it to the ridiculous. They're turning the financial services industry into the McDonald's of financial services. Get it cheap, get it quick, get it easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that way. Now, as you know, Matt, many investors will say to you, I can give a rat's behind what I own. That's why I hire you, the financial advisor, to tell me what to do with my money. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't have time to deal with it. That's why I've hired you. So you should know that, and most of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so subsequently, when we go through a financial crisis like we did, or when we have a correction, investors, as I often say, Matt, don't care what they own until they care about what they own.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. So I think that we believe here at Nepsis that there is a significant underserved market of investors because they have not been given the right framework, the right questions to ask when determining who should manage their money. Instead of asking the two most popular questions, what are your fees and how have you done versus benchmarks? By the way, benchmarks are nothing more, in my opinion, than an excuse for someone to justify their job.
Sure.
The benchmark should always be, am I on track
That's right.
to accomplish the financial future I want to have?
Yep.
That's the benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the investor should focus on. And when it comes to the cost, when people talk about the fees, as we like to say often, Matt, in the absence of value, thus becomes cost.
Yes.
If you're asking cost and you're complaining about the cost, you have not given the client the value they perceive they need to be successful in their investment process. Can you tell I'm just a little bit passionate?
Just
about
a tad. Yes, I can tell. Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of statistics out there, I think, that would back up my theory here, Matt. Number one, from the end of June 2017 to the end of September 2017, the amount of cash, they call it M1, M2, so money market, IRAs and SEPs, savings accounts, the whole kit and caboodle, went up from the end of June to the end of September 2017. Additionally, there is more cash on the sidelines today than there was at the bottom of the financial crisis in 2009. Why? I ask the simple rhetorical question, why is that? We fundamentally believe that investors are more concerned about a stock market correction.
Yeah.
They're more concerned about the next black swan event.
Mm-hmm.
They're more concerned about, quote unquote, losing money in the short term than taking a strategic approach of investing in great businesses over time and allowing volatility to be their friend and a strategic must-have to be successful longer term in their investment process.
You know, I had an advisor a little while ago that I was talking to that said a lot of people don't understand that different levels of volatility actually allows you to purchase stocks and great companies at a discount. Is that part of how you invest with Clarity?
That's exactly right. So we start with what we call the four keys to investing for success, or the four keys to successful investing.
Okay.
It's your investment philosophy, your investment strategy, flexibility, and transparency.
Okay.
We call the investment philosophy and strategy the empirical components of investing, which are very important, but equally important, where most people don't spend a lot of time focusing on, is the behavioral and the artistic component of investing,
mm-hmm.
which requires flexibility and transparency. These are the cornerstones to what we believe bring a greater potential for investment success, because what it does is it provides you a process. Investing is a process. It is not a function of picking the fund with the best returns last year. It is not a function of chasing a stock going higher. I always find it interesting, Matt, we've seen this in investor behavior many times before, where they will not want to buy a stock when it's going down. But when that baby's going up, man, they want to load up and they want to buy as much as possible. And that tells me that you do not have a legitimate strategy in place for being successful in investing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this goes back to the idea that studies have been done behaviorally that state that when an investor is making money, they have a certain sense of euphoria and feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
When they are losing money, they feel five times greater pain than the euphoria they feel when they're making money. And so they, by nature, become more behavioral in their thought process as opposed to what we call sticking to the knitting, sticking to the investment strategy.
Let's talk about flexibility a little bit more, because it's interesting that you say that you have flexibility built into the plan. How do you accomplish that, and how does that not look much more fluid and willy-nilly?
Yeah, great question. This is one of the differentiators of Nepsis as a firm. First of all, we call ourselves a global all-cat asset allocator. We are an unconstructed money management firm, meaning we don't care how big the company is, how little the company is. If we think we should own hedges against a sector, which we've done in the past, we'll do that. If we think we should buy emerging markets, international, United States, whatever it may be, but we are going to asset allocate the portfolio relative to the investment objectives of the investor. And then we're going to invest in all across the world in all different sizes and use precious metals, real estate, cash, whatever it may be that is part of their investment goals and objectives in an appropriate asset allocated manner. Now, to answer your question more specifically, we have trademarked a phrase called strategic cost averaging. Now, of course, everybody's heard of dollar cost averaging,
totally,
which is the process of investing equal dollar amounts at the same time over and over again into your portfolio. Well, when you've got $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, Matt, that works great. But what happens in your 401k when you can only put $20,000 in your 401k and your 401k is sitting at a half a million or a million or 300,000, whatever big number it is, and 20,000 doesn't make that much of an impact on the portfolio as your dollar cost averaging.
Sure.
Strategic cost averaging provides a greater level of, let's call it, we call it the sniper rifle approach as opposed to the shotgun approach. Mm-hmm. Dollar cost averaging, shotgun approach. We take equal dollar amounts across the asset allocation. But not necessarily all assets are moving at the same time. So as we're putting money to work, we can strategically decide where we want to buy more of a specific investment, take profit in another investment to raise cash, and have a process in place that's more fluid, enabling us to continually invest and take profits in great businesses that we own to maintain the asset allocation. And strategic cost averaging is a major differentiator of Nepsis and what we do and how we do it. Because as you probably know, Matt, many financial advisors, many portfolios, many investors, they will move money from one firm to another.
Mm-hmm.
They sell everything at once, and then they go buy everything at once in the new portfolio.
Yes.
That's asset allocating on a macro, more generic level.
Yes.
When Nepsis has money come in, we have specific companies we want to own, and some of those companies may have moved way too fast right now. So we don't want to buy that right now. We're okay sitting in cash, mm-hmm. waiting to buy that. Or we've got a company that maybe we want to start buying it right now, but we don't want to allocate our full percentage. Strategic cost averaging is the foundation of the power of flexibility, enabling you to take advantage of opportunities made put forth to you in your investment process.
Now, you just used a couple of very powerful words that I think we need to highlight, which again is cash and profit. So those are the two words I want you to unpack a little bit more, because, you know, cash, there are people who are very averse to cash, that they want to be consistently invested in the market, which I'm sure you've heard that before. But the other thing is, when you're taking profits, that becomes a taxable event. Now, are you talking about that being a taxable event on a much smaller scale because of how you're doing it strategically than with asset allocation?
Okay, so complicated question. Great question. So let me try to unpack that. First of all, one of the things we tell people is that you don't pay us to own cash. You pay us to know when to own cash.
Oh, wow. That's smart. I like that. That's catchy, dude. That's smart.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well done.
But that's true.
Sure.
So as you look at a fixed income environment that we're in right now,
mm-hmm.
owning bonds is extremely risky.
Mm-hmm.
So being unconstrained, allowing us to go do what we want. I shouldn't say unconstructed. Unconstrained. We are very constructed. Being unconstrained, it allows us to pick and choose where and when we want to invest, right? Well, if we don't want to own fixed income, we're not going to own fixed income. Now, the financial advisor, the investor will say, well, how am I going to get my income? How am I going to get my returns to give me the money I need to live on, or whatever their reason may be, right? This is why most investors have been misled, and financial advisors, in my opinion, don't necessarily focus on this the right way, not because they don't want to, but because they're forced into a scenario because the clients push them that way. And it's to say this, Matt, investors focus on the portfolio as a whole in terms of, hey, I'm income and growth. I pay you to invest my money in something to make money on it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes cash is the greatest investment to own.
Hmm.
And as we have not been in much of any fixed income over the last few years, our conservative portfolios are still doing 6-8% per year, which is significantly higher than any type of income portfolio. Because investment success, Matt, this is very important, folks, is a function of what we call risk-adjusted return. Risk-adjusted return. How much risk am I taking to get the returns I get? And financial advisors and investors will set up an asset allocation based on their investment objectives, right? I view that as merely another way of saying we want to manage the volatility within our portfolio. I mean, ultimately, that's really what you're trying to do, is match the investor's investment objectives with the volatility associated within their portfolio. If it makes sense to own cash, cash is an investment. And cash may not make you very much money, but it's not going to lose you money.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, mm-hmm. and it gets deeper conversation, but cash is not going to go down in value per se like a bond potentially could. And if you asset allocate, if you have flexibility to take advantage of great businesses or other income producing investments on sale, that flexibility gives you a leg up in your investment process and your ability to invest with success. Now, to answer your second part of that regarding paying taxes,
mm-hmm.
we are an SMA firm, separately managed account. So we're unconstrained. We're all over the world. We do whatever we want, basically, based on the investment objectives, which, by the way, Matt, includes every client of ours receives a 15 to 16 page investment policy statement.
Wow.
Detailing how the who, what, where, when, why, and how of the management of their portfolio and the alignment of the investment objectives relative to the investor's goals.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But because we're an SMA, because we are unconstrained, we're global asset allocator, we have the ability, and as one of our four cell disciplines, which we'll cover on a separate podcast, our four cell disciplines, one of them is tax management, tax loss harvesting, managing tax outcomes. And as we like to say, we love to minimize taxes, maximize returns, and take advantage of great financial opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So tax management is key.
Okay.
As we are moving a portfolio from one allocation they had to the Nepsis allocation, that is done over time, and that is done strategically based on when we want to own the assets we want you to own in your portfolio when you come under Nepsis management.
Okay. You also just highlighted something there that I don't think a lot of our listeners truly understand what an investment policy statement is. They'll get something from their financial advisor that's maybe a page that's like this overarching philosophical document that's not tailored or specific to their specific needs. You've got a 14-page doc here, man. Can you unpack that a little bit and walk us through what a real investment policy statement should be?
Sure. So first and foremost, we believe that success starts with expectations. The investor is going to have expectations of the money manager, and quite frankly and bluntly, the money manager is going to have expectations of the investor. And we detail what those expectations are within the investment policy statement. One of the problems investors have is that they don't allow their investment process to work over time. They become impatient. They don't like something about what they're doing or what they're getting. And so they end up moving from one place to the other because they become impatient. We highlight the expectations of the investor and the expectations of what we believe we're supposed to be doing for that investor. That's number one. Number two, we believe successful investing requires the investor to have a basic understanding of what the investment philosophy and strategy is of how you're going to go about making the decisions. What's the portfolio principles? What's my investment objective? And what's the framework for what does that mean? My time horizon, my risk tolerance, the rebalancing procedures, the cell discipline. What assets are permissible to own and not own? Some people don't want to own energy companies. Some people don't want to own, you know, alcohol companies. We provide the format for them to do that. And then there's duties and responsibilities of us as well as the investor. The reporting that needs to be done, the communication between the investor and the money management firm. And then lastly, of course, tell me, what is the investment philosophy? How do you go about making these decisions? And what is the strategy in the implementation of those decisions, whether it's the buy part of it or the sell part of it, the sell discipline? So it's a very detailed document that frames out expectations, which, again, we believe is a function of clarity, number one. And number two, a tool that will enhance an investor's ability to be successful to sticking to a process over time.
Yeah, setting expectations. I mean, you've been married for how many years now?
30 short, illustrious years.
Right. So one of the reasons why you've been successfully married, and if everybody hasn't heard the first podcast that Mark and I did about who he is, and this is a huge component of who he is from a character perspective, setting clear expectations and making sure that you communicate those expectations are probably one of the reasons why you've been so successfully married. This relationship with a financial services professional should be looked at as a long-term relationship. And if you don't have clear expectations, if you're not communicating effectively, that's not going to continue. So everybody who's listening to this should deconstruct this podcast even more. And we're going to dive deeper and deeper into what Mark is talking about here. But if you don't get good communication, if you don't understand what your advisor is saying, if you don't understand what the investment policy statement is and what your part of it is, then you are not going to have a successful relationship with an advisor. You're going to be bouncing back and forth, which, and I'm sure, Mark, I'm going to ask you this, what happens when a client is bouncing all over the place instead of staying with one philosophy and one sort of way to invest?
Great question. We don't run into that too much, obviously, because we set the expectations up front.
Yep.
And so we don't run into that problem very often. When we do, we kindly tell the advisor to tell an investor, look, you're not going to get to be able to take advantage of this process because of the way you're doing it. Mm-hmm. So it's not good for you and it's not good for us. And most importantly, because it's not good for you, you need to find something that's more suitable for you.
But
I'm going to pause the advisor to look at a different option.
But people end up with you. I apologize if I wasn't clear with my direction there, but people are going to end up with Nepsis because they're finally finding a firm that provides actual clarity. Right.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that when you get people who land and look around and say, oh, my gosh, this is what everything was supposed to be like, you get to hear horror stories of what it was like previously.
Yeah, and it really boils – yeah, great point, great comment. Exactly, and this is why we are Nepsis. This is why Nepsis is invest with clarity, mm-hmm. and that invest with clarity starts with knowing what you own and why you own it. And you may not want to unpack that super deep, but the mere fact, because a lot of investing is behavioral – look, if an I say to investors all the time, J&J is a great example. I remember I told this story on our radio show that J&J one day opened at $2.90 back in like 1982. I was in high school.
Okay.
If I was even smarter back then, I would have bought it. And the stock went to $3.10 that day, and it went from $3.10 to close at like $2.70. Okay?
Wow.
So the stock range in that day was $2.70 to $3.10. It was all over the place. This was 1982. Today, the stock's $140.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
What's the point of the story? As Jeremy Siegel says, the longer you own stocks, the less risky they become. The reason why investors, and you know Dalbar goes all over this,
mm-hmm.
investors consistently buy at market highs and sell at market lows.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because they have not been given the appropriate information for them to make an educated decision mm-hmm. on what's best for their money. And at the same time, Matt, the greatest wealth ever created in this world since the inception of time has been by people doing what? Investing in great businesses.
Yeah.
Period. And that's what we stick to at Nepsis.
Well, and again, it always makes me laugh when Warren Buffett is challenged at events about, you know, why he is so long term in buying good companies and, you know, kind of riding it out. And he buys most of his companies when they're a little bit discounted. So he knows that he's going to be able to. But he also dives super deep. Right. And that's really neat.
Yes.
If anybody has ever read anything about his investment management process, it really is fascinating. It's a little heady. And that's why you use somebody like Nepsis, because, I mean, you have to have somebody who can translate that stuff. Don't just pick up the book on your own. You have to get some nerdy guy like Mark here to explain it to you, or one person on his team.
Right.
Okay, I think you've done a great job today of talking about really what clarity is. I'm excited to hear more about what you're cell discipline in. I'm actually even more excited to hear about what you're buy discipline in. I definitely want to dive in a little bit more of what the investment policy statement means, what it says, and how it's applicable to each of the people who work with you, either advisors or individual clients. So today we talked about investing with clarity. Any closing statements?
No, I think in the future podcast, great idea. We are going to unpack the sell discipline, the buy discipline. You can't have one without the other. You need both.
Mm-hmm.
I think dissecting the investment policy statement, which will dig deeper into the investment philosophy and strategy of the how and why we make the decisions we make, when we make the decisions we make them, I think are a great format to begin the baseline of helping advisors and investors begin their road to Nepsis, their road to ultimate clarity and investing with clarity.
And with that, this was episode number two with Mark Pearson, Why Invest with Clarity. Thank you very much. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, make sure you click the subscribe now button below. Thank you all very, very much. And we're going to continue to learn more about Nepsis.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC registered investment advisor.